Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Today, we're talking to film critic Florian Koch. He graduated with his master's thesis on the filmmaker Helmut Keutner, which focused on the director's activities during and after the Third Reich. Florian has been writing reviews for his own website, cineblog.de, as well as freelancing for portals like filmstarts.de and kinozeit.de, and working in the Asia Film Fest. For more than 10 years, Florian has been a freelance writer for the Abendzeitung Munich, also covering Berlinale and Filmfest Munich. In 2012, he was a member of the jury for the Bavarian Film Award. And most important for us, Florian has a soft spot for genre film. We talked to him via video call for this interview. Down with us today. Today we'll be talking in depth about the genre of war film, or to widen the definition a bit, war and armed conflict in film and TV. We will mainly focus on All Quiet on the Western Front and on Munich, Edge of War during our talk, but obviously you will also be referencing other films as well. A point that came up quite a lot during the conversations about All Quiet was the specific lens through which Germans look at war, especially the past two world wars. The inherent national guilt leads to the genre not actually being something German filmmakers gravitate towards. Nevertheless, Edward Berger felt the story needed to be told for the modern day audience. And I remember I was surprised and not entirely sure when I first heard about the film. So as an expert on the genre, I would be interested in how you perceived the film when you watched it and where you would rank it in the genre.
First, good morning and thank you for having me. But to come back to your question, I was curious. First, because it's not the first adaptation of this famous novel by Erich Maria Remarque. We all know the 1930 adaptation by Nils Milestone. It is a milestone in filmmaking. It's a classic. And 1979 also a quite good television adaptation. Why do we have to have another one?
And exactly.
Mr. Berger was the director, he said in a few interviews, and is correct. I think we don't have the perspective of Germans, of the German filmmaker. Mm. Was an international production, but not a German one. And I think that's interesting because he has a different touch for the history. And I think he made interesting choices of the Athenian because he cut short the exposition, changed some lines. There's no home front going backstory.
Yeah.
Especially, I really like a new timeline, a new perspective by what's behind all those horror? It's a peace conversation about Matthias Erzberger and Admiral Foch, who were in Compania on the train. And there, it was really tough negotiation. And there was really the sentence of the movie, I think. It's by Mr. Brühl, who play him perfectly, Mr. Erzberger. He said, hey, we are talking here. But when we talk, when we go further and further with the negotiation, Germany will be empty. So many soldiers are dying every second, and it's really tragic. We have to move on. So you can really feel what it means in the contrast to what's going on in the trenches, the bloody, really tough story. So I really like the perspective to have this novel with the dehumanization of war and all those cruelty, and give them new life for a new generation with a new timeline and perspective. That was really what sold me on this movie.
Okay. Looking at films such as Private Ryan and A Thin Red Line, for example, of which especially the latter, in my opinion, is a devastating visceral display of the senselessness of war, they still have some sort of a hero's journey as part of their plot and character development. And that is not something German war films or series can really do. At best, there's an ambivalence. And what is your take on this? Should war films in general even use a hero's journey, given that it should be quite clear that there are no heroes in war?
That's a good question. It's also really question, which is really for our filmmaking, our history, because it's our shameful history, our guilt.
Yeah.
And we can't tell hero movies, especially in war. And it's different in the US. You have a whole other perspective. You can make a Top Gun Maverick movie with a hero, and it's naive. You can't do it in Germany. It's different thinking. It's a bit different mindset. The reflection is different, but it comes natural there. It's not our country. You have to admit it changed in the last 20, 30, 40 years. Also in the US, you have the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
After that, you got Apocalypse Now, Platoon, other movies with dealing with trauma, dealing with PTSD, dealing with the horrific effects on the front lines. So it's really a development, those classic. And it's also telling there is no really genre anti-war movies. It's anti-war, it's a part of war movies, and all war movies today have to be anti-war movies because of the reflection of the history.
Yeah.
Because you're naive and you can't compare. And I think what really is a movie I have to go to, yes, and again, which really reflects, it's the masterpiece by a female filmmaker, Kirsten Bigelow, The Hurt Locker,
yeah.
When they're coming home and there's no way to live a normal life anymore. And it's also in the Western Front, is that what are we doing when we're coming home?
Yeah.
What is our future like? So there can't be heroes. And especially what's really interesting, I want to admit, at a small movie, which is shot in Germany, was The Contractor with Chris Pine. It's about a war hero in Afghanistan, and he has a detour and he's injured and he can't do his life anymore. He can't live his life, so he goes to military groups. It's an undervalued movie because you see it. This is a mainstream movies where you also have to put the trauma and all these effects in because it wouldn't be believable anymore. So it's not only the war movies which have dealing with the hero anti-hero concept, it's also the mainstream movies who have to develop to be believable.
Yeah. Moving on to the depiction of war, specifically violence on the battlefield and off. For me, still one of the best visual scenes showing the disjointed confusion of combat is actually that battle scene at the very beginning of Gladiator. And while modern warfare has obviously changed a lot of things about war, think about drones and other modern weaponry. In the end, there is still the fight for survival and lots of blood and guts. How did you perceive the battle scenes in All Quiet? Were they too violent, or did they accomplish what Remarque with his book and director Edward Berger set out to do?
I think that's also an interesting question because how do you deal with violence?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, in today, because, yeah, we comment further and other questions. But here, I think Edward Berger, he's done it right. Because the novel, if you have read it, it's not autobiographical.
Yeah.
It's not his own life. But he, Mr. Remarque, he has the perspectives of many soldiers. He put together an episodes in his book. And they're cruel. They are really tough. There's really dirty, dirty, tough war. And it's also shown, it's not only the Second World War, which are so many movies about, it's also all the violence. It started the really new kind of horrific war is the First World War, with the new weapons and the tanks and so on. And this gruesome...
And the gas.
Yeah, the gas. You have to show it, I think. If you... Because it's the real life there. When you adapt this kind of novel, you can't leave it out, especially because it's so much in the trenches.
Yeah.
You have to have this confusion. And I liked Mr. Berger, he goes so on. They are great actors in here, but you can't distinguish them under their helmets. It's the individual part of the person. It's drawn out. You're really functioning there. It's like, I have to say, like Walking Dead. Yeah, the mud in the faces. It's going to extreme, and he wants to. He leaves me in the dust with all those. So there is no human side anymore. It's really, yeah. It's another time, and it's when you have it, there's no escape from it. And yeah, I think this deadening atmosphere is something that is really really. In the movie and in the book. You have to show it.
I'd like to get a little bit more specific about the depiction of the blood and guts and talk about the danger of showing too much violence. As someone who's seen quite a few films of the genre, what is your take on how much should be shown or not? And what is, in your experience, more effective? Or does that depend on the storytelling mostly, in your opinion?
Yeah, it depends on the storytelling. Yeah, you can say also the years before, like Stanley Kubrick, Full Metal Jacket, and so on, there was also violence, but yeah. It's not all over the movie. You have to think what kind of violence I show. Do I stylize it, stage it? I have many problems, I have to admit, with Sam Mendes' 1917. It's so beautiful shot. Okay. It's fantastic. This one shot sequences went from the great Roger Deakins, a cinematographer, but it's so beautiful that it's sometimes you have to. It's too much. I think you have to. Oh, the violence is beautiful too, shown on it. It's an aesthetic where I think does the viewer feel this violence or does it? Oh, what an amazing picture! What amazing shot! There yeah. you have with the technical devices, the camera work, which you can, the CGI effects, they're so good. You have to show, it's a thin line where you walk. And I think Edward Berger managed it gracefully. And there are many great shots, the drone shot at the beginning, but it's not too much stylization, I think. And you have to, one thing I really like about it, about his showing, because there, the deadening of the soldiers, and the brutal violence is also it's the deadening of the viewers. It's yeah. not suspenseful. You go, don't go. It's so gruesome. And you also, and after the movie, you look in the mirror and said, what did I see? Why I'm so, you're really tired of, and you really, you don't want to do something. And it's the same as the situation as the soldiers. So you get this atmosphere right, I think. If you have this reflection, this kind of mirror.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I saw it and then when I reflected on it, at some point I felt like, okay, how much violence did I really see? Because it felt like there was so much going on, like my brain couldn't actually process all of it. So I think I blocked out some images, to be honest. The next question, this might lead us a bit away from the war aspect, but we talked about this, or you talked about this a little bit in your earlier answers, but given the manifold, successful action films such as John Wick, The Expendables, and as you mentioned, the Marvel and the DC comic films, do you think that audiences, well, you already said it actually, that, it might desensitize the audience to violence? Yeah. And there's also, in the US, a lot of times there's this discussion, it's like, oh, you can't show naked breasts, but of course you can show someone being, tortured and murdered. And there really is that weird dichotomy. And you think like, why is that okay? And that is not okay. And you don't really understand why that is.
I think you're really right. You're right. And that's a problem. I'm afraid, I have got two kids and I'm afraid the movie is really the children movie. They get crueler. In parts, the age rating gets softer, the video game is, and it's also easier to get the videos in the internet yeah. and so on. And you have to be really careful. I have a really problem with the movies which are toying with violence and have fun with it, like the Deadpool uh-huh. movies. And or the last movie I was really disgusted was Violent Night.
Oh, God.
It was a Santa Claus, yeah. Santa Claus on a killing spree. It's very successful. It has good ratings. It's original, funny, they say. But it's so gruesome. Don't they think about it? It's a development where I think, what will it be in the future? And do I want to have it? I think sometimes it's okay for me when it's so distant, like John Wick. It's like a ballet. Action sequences, which is more sports. You can say, why do they have to be so violent? That's a good question. But they don't do something with the viewer. But that's the really tough one when you want to really tell a serious story and you show violence as part of it, the less is the best. You see the CGI effects on blood. It's it's not good because I don't see what the future would like. It's too many movies who are doing that. But going back to The Quiet of the Western Front, there the story, the novel, the existing novel and the themes, they reflect what you see, the reality on those times. That's a different point of view. And there's no scene from Mr. Berger where you're laughing at the scene. Always say it's really, it's for me, it's an excess, which is it's not, it's too much because it's so well made.
Well, plus in the action films, you all, like you mentioned, you know, a lot of times things happen that are just in no normal person, biological person, you know, would be able to survive that, let alone fight back. You know, that makes it even more harder to watch sometimes, because you think like, why is this happening? You know, there's no real connection to the storytelling anymore. Like you said, I mean, it's just,
it's like video games.
Exactly. Yeah,
but you don't have the joystick in the cinema.
Absolutely.
And it's a one-player modus. They have sequences with the first-player modus.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know what the future will be. It's very difficult.
Absolutely. So we're moving a little bit sideways, away from the violence. A bit overlooked for, you know, this particularly genre is, I feel, a lot of times the score, which I think is also quite important.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it tends to be quite orchestral and a lot of dramatic overload, and a word often used, of course, is epic. And I personally sometimes feel a little bit manipulated, emotional manipulation of the audience. Would you say that a big score is actually what is needed for these films, or would you say it's better if, you know, the score takes a step back? By the way, Edward Berger specifically mentioned that he asked his composer to avoid any kind of big emotions in the score.
Yeah, let's stay on the Edward Berger movie, because I think the score is really magnificent. And it's the work of Volker Bertelmann, who is also famous as his name Hauschka.
Mm-hmm.
And he has worked with Hilary Hahn, Oscar winner Hildur Guðnadóttir. I don't know if I spelled her right, but she's so magnificent. And he knows what to do. I read about it, and there is really a theme which is, it's not really a theme, it's a melodic piece which is, it is really haunting.
Yeah.
And it's, he said it was on an old harmonium of his grandma or of his family.
Yeah.
And it's a three note piece which is really dark, and it's like a breathing sound through a gas mask, rhythm sound in the back. Yeah, the sound of war, which you can call, you're really haunted by it. It's and you're not manipulated by that. It's a great piece. I think he's done right, because those melodic great pieces, like in the old days, it's not appropriate anymore.
Yeah.
Look at what Hans Zimmer has done on Dunkirk, also working with like kind of a ticking clock or something like that. There's small themes, small motifs which are pointed out. Mr. Bertelmann has done it right.
Absolutely, I agree with that. It's a little bit like, obviously this is a 180, but almost like Jaws in a way. You know, you have this like very, very
John
distinct sort of number of notes. They just grab you, take you sort of through the movie with the character. We in the Western world have been very lucky not to have had to experience a war on our doorsteps for a long time, until now, of course, if you look at Ukraine. But a lot of war films are historical films as well. And on top of that, you know, we have the issue, as you mentioned earlier, also the sea of uniforms, which, you know, reduce a character's individuality. And I wanted to know, do you feel that a certain historicalness gives war films a different emotional impact, maybe a lesser one?
Generally speaking, I think, that's true, because sometimes it looks really far, far away from yourself. But also, you have to admit, you can't fake history. You have to reflect the reality with all the costumes, with the talking and so on. And though that's a really tough one on the director to overcome the distance. And yeah, you have to have great character actors. You have to have the expressions, the gestures to show you the horror by portraying a person who grows near to you, though you can feel them and you can forget the content, the costumes and so on. Mm-hmm. But that's one problem. That's when you see it's artificial, because with today experience of the viewers, they are so aware of mistakes. They know when something is really wrong, when there's a mistake, it's on Twitter or something like that. You get hacked.
Yeah.
And so you have to really be correct, but you have to be authentic and you have to get those emotions. So it's very, very difficult. I think Mr. Berger has done it. It looks really real with the great actors, and you feel them despite the smaller budget. And that was a tough task, which he managed.
Yeah, absolutely. And given that the genre is dominated very much by male characters and stories,
yeah,
this is a little less the case when war films depict events that happen off the battlefield, such as Munich, The Edge of War. And what Munich does depict very well, I might add, is the battles that are fought in diplomacy, which obviously you mentioned earlier with All Quiet as well, that sort of new angle that was shown. And there's one scene in particular in Munich where the prime minister explains why he tries to avoid war at all costs. And he talks about his friends who died in World War I, which is, of course, you know, the war that All Quiet depicts. Now, given that there are no battles and the violence in the film is much more a threat than at the forefront, would you actually qualify or classify Munich as a war film?
That's a tough question, but for me, it's not a war movie. It's for me, it's a thought thriller, mm-hmm. this dramatic experience, like the novel, the great novel by Mr. Harris, yeah. Robert Harris. And it's like it's the war movie. It has to be at the background, really. This violent conflict. You know, you're in it. But here, it's before it, and it's that makes the movie really suspenseful. Also, it's like a Hitchcock movie, because you know what is coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know the failure of Chamberlain, but not everybody really knows the details and knows why it failed. Why does the negotiations fail? And that makes this movie really a Hitchcock-like thriller.
Yeah. Well, and in a way, you could even say, was it really a failure? Because if you follow the logic that is, you know, used in the film, he knew he could not get what he actually wanted. So he tried to, you know, at least get some reprieve and play for time. But like you said, I mean, it is a really taut thriller. And even though everybody knows what happened, you're really sort of going with the characters and it's a suspenseful film. And that takes us a little bit to, you know, the question of the hero's journey that we talked about earlier. Would you maybe say that this might be a reason why there are more war thrillers or dramas made in Germany than obviously the war or the uniform films, because there is an element of hope and redemption that can be part of the story?
Yeah, that's true. I think there are two aspects. One aspect is also the comparisons, the anxiety by many filmmakers. You can't level up to the great war movies with other ones, because it's so you have the budget, you have all technical achievements, and the critics here are very harsh. The audience is harsh when you don't get it right.
Yeah.
So that's for me, it's a point where we're not so much movies, because you know it from Stalingrad with a long time ago, but there were many discussions about
this.
And also it's quite telling that you have so many movies about those who fought against Nazi. Sophie Scholl, you have Bonhoeffer, the movie, and the Elsa movie by Oliver Hirschbiegel.
Yeah.
It's easier for the audience to the Stauffenberg movies and so on.
Yeah,
they have failed, but they failed to bring the enemy, you say, down. But at least they fought, and you have to admit it. But it's not the truth. It's the vast majority of the Germans that supported the system. That's really problematic, because though many movies show, there were those fighter against the system. It's not really, it's a small part, it's a detail, but it's not telling about the real situation and the scope of horror, which was, it's an easier route around.
Yeah.
As good as they are. And there's, it don't represent Germany in those dark times. And, but perhaps, yeah, you it's easier to get the audience in the cinema because it's easier to have a hero than you have this cruelty. So perhaps Netflix stepped in and makes All Quiet and the Western Front. You critic Netflix and the streaming giants, but I'm glad that this movie is here by Edward Berg and his vision. It's really, it's not a normality in Germany.
Absolutely, yeah. And now we have a few general questions.
Yeah, great.
So given that you're, you know, a genre expert, what is your favorite maybe German anti/war film and why?
I'm sorry, Christine, but I have to say there are two.
It's fine.
Okay. But they both have a German impact and they were with influences. The first one is my most favorite anti-war movie. It's Paths of Glory by Stanley Kubrick. It's fantastic. It's a chess game. Yeah, you see all aspects. You have the senselessness. You have the hierarchy. You have the people in charge who have nothing at risk. And you have the poor soldiers in the trenches.
Yeah.
And you have this Kirk Douglas character who's behind those two lines. It's so intelligent, fantastic, makes suspenseful. It was in Schloss Schleißheim, you see something. So they're really, it stands, the movie, after so many years on its time, it's still this great movie. But my number one war movie on the German side is Die Brücke. The Bridge,
yes, of course,
by Bernhard Wicke, and it's I saw it, I hosted it, the movie, and there were tears in the audience. It's still holds its time. It's there are two parts of the movie I really like. It's all those young boys, the naivety, they're looking forward for war. They're influenced by the propaganda in the school, and they don't know what it's coming. It's really. And then it's a breakdown when they have to go to war. The senseless fight on the bridge against where they're undermanned and dying by another. It's still on the technical, emotional and aspect. It's still ahead of its time. It was and still is standing on its own, on its feet. It's all those great directors like Steven Spielberg, Kubrick, they refer on those movie, like in Saving Private Ryan. There's really a copy-paste sequence of this movie, and that it's a reason for it, because it's a masterpiece still.
This leads us to the next question. Why would you recommend for young audiences today to make sure to watch maybe these two films, but anti-war films in general?
Like go on history classes. It's remember the past.
Yeah.
And you only when you understand, when you remember the past, get to know it, you can understand the present and hopefully avoid mistakes in the future. Those lessons has to be told until the end of time, because only there you can influence those in the young age. You can give them perspective what has really happened here and in other countries, and what really a tragic, and so many people lost their lives, and you have to remember them. It's kind of a respect thing and to prevent.
And as a last question, which anti-war film that you watched has been the biggest surprise, positive or negative?
I have to be sorry again, because they're really two, sorry.
But hopefully not the same two.
The one is, I think it's really surprised me. Two positive examples, I think.
Great.
The one that surprised me really is by a filmmaker. We would think, he makes war movies, a bit very good filmmaker, but conservative and so on. It's Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, But he made double movie. It is Letters from Iwo Jima and Flags of Our Fathers. And
yes.
Letters from Iwo Jima. He makes something which only he can do in the US, because he was on his prime. He had the budget. He can do what he wants. And he wants to say, no, we show the perspective of the Americans on this, in this particular part. But I want to go on the other side. I want to show the Japanese, all those famous Japanese actors, the horrors on them, and to give them a room to breathe. It's very modern today to give someone like that, and it's over 18 years ago.
Yeah.
And I have big respect for that, that she gave them the respect and the room to show the perspective of the Japanese.
Okay.
It's what really great. And the other one, it's one of my favorite movies. It's Waltz with Bashir by Ari Folman.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah, with a great score by Max Richter. Yeah, because it was so surprising. He was on the Lebanon conflict. He was really a soldier there. He had a trauma, PTSD, and so on. And he said, hey, I'm an illustrator. My only way to express the horrors is like an animation yeah. film. It's an animation documentary about the war in the Lebanon. And it's really personal, deep experience. And you say, because it's also one companion piece. So we have a female filmmaker who is fantastic. It's Marianne Satrapi for Persepolis, yeah. also on the horror in Iran, the revolution there. And it's her youth, and she's fantastic movie about her younger years. And these are two companion pieces, which I really recommend.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.